Thank you, Keith Pierre. Thank you very much for your lovely voice. Thank you, Richard Payne Trio, today composed as Dennis Turner, Roderick Johnson, and Rudy Spruill. Good morning, family. I'm Reverend Celeste Frazier, Associate Minister here at Unity of Washington, D.C. It is my joy to see you and to greet you this morning. I want to acknowledge a warm welcome to those who are here on the web through live streaming, and absolutely welcome you here as well. I know that we are here at the appointed hour in divine right order. And so, I know I already said my name, but my name is Celeste. And for those of you who don't know, Celeste means heaven. No pressure, right? I remember this priest writing in my book. I think I might have been graduating from grammar school or something. And he said, "You've always been as heavenly as your name indicates." And I remember thinking, dude, you really don't know me at all, right? But in all fairness, I do have my heavenly moments when I'm absolutely aware of who I truly am. He probably remembered when I was in about the fifth grade and I would go to church every morning before school during Lent. It was something that my spirit called me to do. There was a level of commitment. There was a level of piety. Not attempting to be holy, but just being willing to be immersed in the divine energy. And then the rest of the time, I was just a hellion. And by that, I mean I was a kid. I was a normal kid. Just like now, I have a real dedication to the divine. And of course, there are still moments when I'm in unconscious mode and I forget who I am. And here's the thing, we need to be willing to acknowledge that. We can have these high moral ground conversations about how evil a political candidate is and what grace is and celebrate the grace that we have the option to have good people to offset this horrific evil, right? And this is not a plug for either candidate, but it is just to say, isn't it convenient for us to have these people who are publicly available to give us images of good and evil so we don't have to face our own demons, right? Because let's face it, we don't want to. It's not comfortable. It's not something we often choose to do. In fact, if no one ever called us out on our stuff, we may not even take a moment to think about how we may be better humans. We may not, you know, think about what it is to be divine. I have a slide here that I want y'all to see that I'm asking to be brought up now. And so there's this whole idea of we are told that the light is coming to the world, and men have loved the darkness rather than the light. World chaos results from the lack of spiritual light. So I want to be with this whole idea of spiritual light. You know, it's easy for us to think about those moments when we're feeling persecuted. You know, maybe somebody saw something in me and decided that it wasn't heavenly. And how dare they defame my character? And how dare they hurt me? How dare they punish me for something that they didn't like about me? And how is it possible that there is anything not likable about me? Right? But it's what you might call a come to Jesus moment, right? So coming to Jesus implies that there is an opportunity for you to recognize, recognize the presence of God, the Christ in you. And it's not that some people make it easy for us to see the God in them, but in this dimension, I think that's how we learn. You know, I think we learn when we're willing to find our growing edges, to find those spaces and places in us that can be expanded, that can give us opportunities to be more, not to be more of a jerk, but to be more of the presence, to carry a Christ-like energy that is willing to be love. Now, there may be people who are not safe to travel in your head due to the feelings that come up of hurt or sadness. There may be an opportunity here for you to recognize that in separating this particular person out, that you are also separating yourself, capital S self, from God. Because who is not God? I'm not saying that Putin is God. There's no evidence of that, but yet how could I possibly be the authority of what goodness is when I'm not always having good thoughts or doing good things? Next slide, please. I might have skipped forward. Maybe it was the one behind it. Anyway, we are told here that the light has come into the world and that men loved darkness rather than the light, and world chaos results from the lack of spiritual light. So we can plan peace and achieve it, but if this peace is not based on divine law, evolving love, and that law incorporated into the pact of peace as well into the minds of those who sign that pact, we shall have no permanent peace. So the inspired people in flashes of illumination have seen into the very center of reality and have brought back with them a direct impression of what they have seen and felt. Just a glimpse of reality illumines the whole being with a flood of light. You know what I mean? There's like this sense of having the presence that is really palpable. There's that sense of really having the divine energy present in you in such a way that it is undeniable that that is what it is. That's why I have the audacity to call myself a mystic. That's why I have a podcast where I ask each guest to think of a mystical moment that changed their life. And so when I think of a moment like that, I think about a time when I was in bed and I was feeling as though I was dropping rapidly into some lower dimension, and I remember choosing to wake up. And then I woke up and I went to a class at Agape, and I started in this small group. There was small groups of people. I started saying things that I didn't know that I knew. In fact, it wasn't me that was talking. And because it wasn't me that was talking, I was really interested in hearing what they were going to say through me. But I looked at my classmates, and they were all looking with their mouths open like, what's going on here, right? But, you know, we can sit up here and bash someone. We can bash a candidate. But how does that add a cubic to your stature? People have asked me many times if I planned a career in politics, and I always said no. I felt it would corrupt me. But guess what I just realized? You don't have to be in politics to be corrupted. You might say, you just figured that out, Rev. Celeste? Well, maybe. One has to be conscious to be on social media. I'm getting clearer and clearer about that. Or else you will get caught up in the emotional trends of bashing others. Having 5,000 followers means I have to be intentional about what I share. If I care about humanity and not just my wounded self. And though I may fail often, I take responsibility for what I post or repost because I want to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. Because if I truly believe that there is one life that flows through all and that we are all a part of that life, how can I leave anyone out? I can't. No matter how despicable their behavior may be. And worry. Worry not only doesn't add an inch to your height, it likely diminishes your insides. Ever feel something in your stomach when you're stressed? I do. Hell is sometimes described in religious science as a belief in duality. Hell is a discordant state of being. It simply means disagreeing or incongruous. But incongruous simply means not in harmony with the surroundings or aspects of something. You know what that means. You know what that feels like when you're not in harmony with something. Think about how many times you've not been in harmony with a family member, a spouse, a mate, or a date. Even in your church. What? Yeah, I said it. It's already out there. Or think about how the very thought of a political candidate can make your stomach turn. Why do we keep going there? Why do we keep leaving heaven and choosing to go to hell? Don't ask me, but what I do know is that we must have a belief in duality in order for this to happen. You might hear a brother on the street say, "It's all good." Now, a cynical person might say, "That's not true." But that same God-loving person will say, "God is good all the time." How could you be the same person who thinks both? And yet we are. Fillmore invites us into peace by evolving love in its purest sense contains peace. There was this quote, "We may plan peace and achieve it, but if this peace is not based on divine law, evolving love, and that law incorporated into the pact of peace as well into the minds of those who sign that pact, we shall have no permanent peace." So he's inviting us to attain peace by evolving love. Because love in its purest sense contains peace. And let me try that spiritual progress slide now, please. As much as I accuse New Thought people of doing a spiritual bypass, Old Thought people do it as well. You know what I mean by old thought, this traditional religion. Spiritual progress is predicated on intellectual recognition of spiritual poverty coupled with the self-consciousness of perfection, hunger, the desire to know God and be like him, the wholehearted purpose to do the will of the Father in heaven. Spiritual progress. Isn't that what we want? Spiritual progress. Why do you think Jesus said to his disciples, "Let him who is without sin cast the first stone"? Because like any teacher, he already knew the answer to it. When you broke, what's the first thing you do? Work on how to get more money, right? You have to recognize your spiritual poverty and be aware of your spiritual perfection. So it's not an either or. if you're knowing that there is an emptiness, a hollowness, a type of deadness, if you're feeling like you're not connecting in the way that you think you should, if you're noticing that you are not giving love to this person, that you're not even feeling like you want to give love to this person, then there is some kind of a spiritual poverty happening because spirit is love. And if you are absolutely choosing not to give love to someone, or if you are absolutely unable or think that you are unable to give love to someone because what you feel in their presence is not love but some kind of disgust, then perhaps there is time for some spiritual progress to occur. You have to hunger for the desire to know God in order to love, because God is love. And so I know this because when I feel disconnected from somebody, I know that's the time for me to pray. When I feel disconnected from somebody, I know that's the time for me to go within. I know when I feel disconnected from somebody, that means that there's something that I need to heal, not only in my mind, but in my entire beingness. So you can't act like you're spiritually superior and grow in God. It doesn't work that way. Don't get quiet just because I'm stepping on your toes. You know, we have the desire to throw stones, right? Like the people did back in the day when Jesus and them were walking around. We don't like what they did. Let's stone them to death. Wow. Now, when we think about it in these terms, it seems very, very, like, daunting. It feels, like, kind of shocking. Like, how could somebody do that? Like, how barbaric? And yet, we can throw stones at people without even touching them. Hello, somebody. And so it's interesting for us to be able to think about this. Because if we're thinking about having the desire to throw stones, how do we have room to do the will of God? I'm just asking, because I'm asking myself this question, you know? I just came off of celebrating our Soul Consciously Creating Change conference that I've been working on for the last 2 years, and yes, I'm tired and I'm recovering. But, you know, someone was being willful there, and someone I had hired, and someone I thought I was given a chance to, someone that I had a different experience of than what I experienced at the conference. They wanted something different to happen than the way I had set it up. Now, they were trying to get their way. And I was already aware that my decision was not going to change. And it was a correction from a choice that I had made 2 years ago. When the musicians were on stage, someone had stolen some of their product. So I had chosen to move the table up front where it was visible, where it was accessible to them, and this person wanted their stuff to be out there with the vendors so that people could see them, and I could tell that there was fear there, that there was a need there that it needed to be filled. But I, you know, I felt like I had made myself really clear. This person was new to our music team, you know, and the important part is that I saw her as an aggravation. And that I thought that was clear that she was in fear. And my compassion for her was not greater than my annoyance of her. Okay? And so, you know, and so she would walk around with a scowl on her face during that time that we're there, all those 4 days. And she was also bugging other people, and, you know, until she got what she wanted, you know. So I learned so many lessons from that, you know. May I have the next slide, please? Butterflies. Did you know when butterflies rest? When it rains? Because it damages their wings. Butterflies rest when it rains. It's okay to rest during the storms of life. You'll always fly again when it's over. So what I got from that is butterflies look out for their own good because they have experienced either personally or by observing others that it will impede their flight. Sometimes we can learn from other people's downfalls how to fly in a more appropriate way that'll get us to the heights that we want to go to, that'll get us to the places we want to get to, and that will end up landing whole and not incomplete, not damaged, right? So it's important for us to look out for our good simply because it's a way of loving ourselves, it's a way of honoring ourselves, and it's a way for us to be available for service. When we're damaged, when we're down, when we are feeling less than whole, it is less likely that we can have something to add to life, to whatever you're involved in, to your work, to your friends, to your family. And so we strive to stay healthy. We strive to make healthy choices. We choose to make healthy choices. And as we gain our maturity, we find more ease in making healthy choices. Yes? Dr. Sherry of the World Peace Meditation uses the word peace, and she breaks it out as perceive each atom connected eternally. Quantum physics confirms that every part of me is connected to the entire universe. Imagine that. Every part of you is connected to the entire universe. Trees, mountains, stars, oceans, moon, to every part of you. But we don't act like it, do we? Maybe you do. But she's asking us to sit in this awareness for 15 to 20 minutes to see that connection. And that connection is the source and experience of perfect and lasting peace. I mean, clearly we would not be, right, devastating the environment if we felt that connection. We kind of put environment in a different category from us. But it's like if your mama had 6 children and one was a human, one was a cloud, one was a plot of dirt, right? One was a dog, and one was the wind. But we don't see ourselves as one with everything that is. Somehow we feel like there's a hierarchy in terms of what is more important. And so we wonder how we end up in a world that is devastating, where hurricanes can destroy lives and all these other things are off kilter because of the choices that we made. Now, I'm not trying to make anybody feel guilty, but it's a consideration for us to think about when we think about being connected eternally. Because we don't always successfully do it human to human. We don't think about the fact that we're connected to each other by the atoms that make up who we are. Or maybe you do. Again, I'm just talking about my perspective in terms of what I've experienced. May I have the next slide, please? John 3:13 says, "And no man hath ascended up to heaven, but he came down from heaven, and that he can neither go to nor come from heaven unless he is already there." And that's kind of deep, right? Because most of the time we're thinking about where, how we can get to heaven, where heaven is, how we can land there, what is it that we need to do to get there, how do I get a ticket to heaven, how do I become worthy of going to heaven, who will I see in heaven, will I be surprised at who I see in heaven, right? But it's like the means is the end. Like, in order to love, you have to love, right? In order to know goodness, you need to embrace your own goodness. You need to absolutely live from your own goodness. And that is not to say that that's a skip in the park. When you see things to the opposite of good and, you know, like children say, well, they did it, as if that would justify you not being good. Right? Or if you choose not to be good because you don't want someone else to feel lesser, and so therefore in order to have compassion for that person, some twisted idea is that I shouldn't be as good so that they'll feel all right. Ouch! Did I step on your toes? Because I have absolutely had those kinds of thoughts. Because when people get jealous about somebody, they don't treat them very nice. And so sometimes you think, well, if I become lesser, then maybe they'll treat me nicer, right? And so it doesn't work either, but it's a theory that we test, right? And so to even consider the idea that you're already in heaven may be a really big stretch for you. It may be inconceivable, it may be unbelievable, and it's true. Because how could God create anything in his image and likeness and you not and not be good? Now, talk about ascending to heaven means going to the upper room. There was a guy in New Thought named Homer Johnson who used to talk about going to the upper room. Well, of course, we can recognize the upper room when we think about Jesus and the apostles, but do we think about the upper room meaning going to a higher place in our awareness? Do we think about going to the upper room making a choice that is higher than the choices that I've been making? When we think about going up to heaven, we, for the most part, have been acculturated to think, oh, when I die in the by and by, that's when I go to heaven. But heaven can be right here, right now, in this moment. Because you can't get to some place that you don't recognize and you don't know the direction to get to that place unless you have some kind of knowing, whether that is an internal map or a physical map, depending on whether you're going to a physical place or a non-physical place. There has to be something within you that knows that that destination is achievable and accessible. And so I just really think that, you know, heaven never leaves us. No matter how much time we've been trying to get to heaven, because our thoughts have strayed from it. Someone came into town this week who I was in the process of forgiving, and I agreed to meet because I wanted my healing to be complete. So when we came together to have lunch, it was like no time had passed. Recollections were palpable of former days. And although the person did not apologize for the pain caused, I didn't regret that we connected. Then later in the day, I received a text from them asking to make amends. And they literally said, forgive me. And that was what I needed the most. And I shared that, and the healing happened, right? And so if you are willing to be willing to forgive, but you can't quite make that next step, it appears from what I just experienced that if you are willing to make yourself available, that And I think this is part of it, that we have judged someone based on their behavior. I know y'all don't do that. When you judge someone based on their behavior, you make the totality of who they are be that thing that they did. And so I wouldn't want anybody doing that to me. If I did something in my worst moment and you judged me based on that particular behavior, I would never be able to redeem myself. I would never be able to show that there was something that I needed to course correct. Because each of us know that in the journey of life, we come to those spaces, places where we have to course correct. We cannot keep going in the same way, having disappointing experiences, losing particular, you know, relationships or losing opportunities based on our unwillingness to make a change. And we don't have to spend so much time trying to get to heaven because only our thoughts have gotten in the way. People may not ask for forgiveness, but heaven is always available. So much of our willingness to be in heaven must also include a willingness to leave hell. I invite you to allow your higher self to guide you in each and every moment. Namaste. Thank you.